Hello, this is Bobby Rio from GreatSeducer.com, and I've got another killer interview for you today. Today I'm going to be interviewing Joseph Matthews. Some of you may know him as the name Thundercat. He's the author of the classic book The Art of Approaching. He's also the owner of Thundercat Seduction Lair, which is an infamous blog among the PUA community. Today in my conversation with Joseph, we're going to be discussing his long-lasting feud with Ross Jeffries. We're going to talk a lot of the typical Thundercat community gossip with tons of behind-the-scenes stories of your favorite pickup artists. He's going to reveal the phrase that turned his game around many years ago, how to get over the appearance factor, how to avoid the boring question phase when talking to girls. He's going to give you some tips for approaching, some signals that a girl is really into you, the best places outside of bars and clubs to meet women, and then he's going to reveal a brand new, never-before Thundercat certified opener. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can find it with keywords Great Seducer. Also, leave a comment, leave a review. You can also head over to GreatSeducer.com to check out all of our interviews with the top dating masters. And don't forget, for a limited time, I'm giving out a free ebook containing 177 of the best pickup artist openers I've come across. You can find that free ebook at www.freepuaopeners.com. That's freepuaopeners.com. All right, let's get started with the interview. All right, I'm here with Joseph Matthews, author of Art of Approaching, and also the author of one of the most prolific seduction blogs that's been around for as long as I can remember, Thundercat Seduction Lair. I just wanted to get Joseph on the phone today and just, you know, talk about a bunch of things throughout his time in the community, some of the lessons he's learned, and some of the stuff that he can offer you guys. Joseph, you want to just give a little bit of your background to the people who might not be familiar with you?
Yeah, I can do that.
Great.
Where to start? Well, I kind of got involved in the seduction community originally back in 1998 when I was in college. And I actually kind of go into the story in my book about, like, you know, my beginnings in this. And I've always, I've never really been successful with women, like, at least I wasn't back in that time period. And I'd always had kind of, like, self-esteem issues over, like, how I look. To give people an idea, I like to describe myself as a, like, Tony Soprano's love child, like, just Tony Soprano, except maybe, like, not quite as fat or old, but that's pretty much how I look. You know, I'm bald, overweight, I really don't think I'm a very good-looking guy, personally. And when I was in college, I was, like, you know, really, like, down on myself. I didn't have, like, a lot of self-esteem. So I was, like, rooming with a guy who was, he was, like, a good-looking frat boy. He played lacrosse. Like, you know, he was always bringing girls over. And here I was, this kind of, like, nerd who just, like, sit at home and watch, like, you know, late-night TV and study and stuff. So I didn't really have, like, a lot of, like, great experiences early on in college. So I had, like, I guess you could call it a bit of a, like, a panic attack or a nervous breakdown or something like that one night. And I decided that I had to either, you know, figure out how to get a girl or something along those lines, or just kill myself and, like, end all the suffering. So I went with option A and hopped on the internet. And at the time, the only thing I could find that, you know, was actually teaching guys, like, how to, like, be more successful with women was this course on, like, how to hypnotize women into sleeping with you. So I bought that course. It cost me, like, $250, which was, like, all the Christmas money I had saved up. And, you know, got the course in the mail, and I would listen to it on my way to class. And so, like, you know, I just got really into, like, the hardcore, like, you know, be an NLP seducer type guy. And that was, like, my first foray into the world of, like, you know, self-help and learning how to do better with women and things like that. And after college, I moved out to California and started meeting up with other people, because before then I had been doing everything in a vacuum. Like, it had just been, like, me studying this stuff and trying it out on girls. And then when I moved out here, I actually got involved with, you know, different email lists and different websites and stuff like that, and started networking with other guys who were trying to do this stuff. I eventually became friends with, you know, guys who were big names today, people like Mystery, Neil Strauss, a bunch of other guys. And like we all would just run around Hollywood together and try and pick up chicks and learn from each other and stuff like that. And we were on a message board called Mystery's Lounge at the time. It was like an invite-only message board where Mystery, you know, he had it set up and you could only get in if, like, Mystery invited you to come and post. So it was kind of like the cream of the crop, like the best of the best guys out there were, like, all posting and sharing techniques and stuff on this message board. And I started a blog. At the time, blogs were, like, really new. No one really knew, like, what they were about. Like, most of the stuff, most of the exchange happened on forums like fastseduction.com and things like that. And so I was working at an aerospace company at the time, and most of the time I just sat around and surfed the internet anyway, so I didn't really have a lot to do while I was working. So I started up a blog, and I would just like kind of post about my experiences, like going out and trying out new techniques and picking up girls and things like that. And at first I just told people on Mystery's Lounge, I was like, hey, I'm writing this thing. It's like a daily blog about, you know, my thoughts and experiences, and I'm using it to try and help keep me focused on getting better and improving. And so these guys started coming on and like posting like replies on my blog and stuff like that. And eventually, I guess word got out about it, and because not a lot of people had access to these guys, they started kind of paying attention to me and like what I was writing about, because I talked about how I went out with like so and so. You know, it wasn't like a boot camp type thing where I was paying for it. It was like two friends going out and having like an adventure and stuff. And people really kind of started responding to, I guess, my point of view on certain things.
Yeah, the inside angle.
Yeah, so that's really how the blog came about. And from there, I just kind of, you know, went off in my own direction. And eventually, the guy who I originally bought the NLP course from found out about it and started attacking me on it. And so I started attacking him back. And that's really when the blog kind of took off, was when we were, like, publicly fighting about shit. And people would come on and they'd be like, oh, like it's like Battle of the Titans or something like that. I don't know.
Did that start with you criticizing his? Because I've always known now that there was a little rivalry between you two, but I never knew what started it. Was it because you like criticized his course or said it didn't work for you, or was it just Ross being Ross?
Well, you can actually go back on the blog and the archives and kind of like look at my posting, where like you can kind of see it unfold. But basically, what happened was they had this like the SS list, they called it, which was like, you know, Ross's private email list. And basically all of his students would like get access to it. Once you bought one of his courses, you could go on there, ask questions and things like that, but you were never allowed to talk about any stuff that actually worked, which was, you know, all the stuff outside of the NLP junk.
Yeah.
So like it was like very strictly controlled. And at the time I started the blog, I was actually still kind of brainwashed in like the whole NLP mindset. So I didn't want to piss Ross off really. So like I was really active on the list, giving people advice, you know, trying not to, you know, make it sound like I was going off topic on the NLP stuff, but really kind of like, you know, giving them what I found really worked.
Yeah.
And I was gaining kind of a following among his students. I think that was like the first red flag where Ross was just like, who the hell is this guy? Because I went on a different name on that list than I did on my blog. And then I started posting stuff on my blog, like reviewing his courses and giving like an honest opinion, where I would say like for instance, the Incredible Confidence course that he had. I was like, a lot of the visualizations he gives in the course don't work. I don't know why they don't work. They just don't. And I think it would be more effective if he did it this way. Like, it wasn't like a scathing critique or anything. It was just like honest kind of breakdown of why I didn't think it was very good. And eventually, I guess someone on the list who was reading my blog told him about it, and he looked at that as like a personal attack against him. So he's like, he did the worst thing that Ross could possibly think of at the time, which was to ban me from Speed Seduction and all SS-related events for life. So it was like this thing. He's like, he sent me this really nasty email. And he's like, you've been kicked out and banned. And so I went to a post called Kicked and Banned, and you know, all about how like I got banned from the Speed Seduction list. And I was like, well, if he doesn't like me anymore, I guess there's no reason to be nice to the guy. So I really started telling people what I thought about, you know, the speed seduction stuff and my experiences with it and how it never worked and all that junk. And that was probably the worst thing he could have done, because if he had just, like, sent me, like, an email about how he was disappointed with, like, my take on stuff and kind of, like, kept me in the fold, I probably wouldn't have been, like, so, you know, so mean to the guy. But, you know, after he kicked me out, I was just kind of like, well, okay, now, like, I have no reason to, you know, not be, like, completely honest with what I think about this guy and what he's teaching people. So.
Funny. If you ever want to get a good laugh, back when me and my partner at PSB had a radio show, we had Ross on as a guest. And about midway through the interview, it just took a turn for the worse, because my partner's like, I'm tolerable with everybody, but my partner's like a call-it-how-he-sees-it kind of guy. Mm-hmm. And he just started calling Ross out on things, and it got messy. So you'll enjoy it if you'd like to see Ross put on the spot. And, you know, he's a tough one to shake. You know, he's used to controlling the interviews, and to see him lose control is pretty funny.
Yeah, and you know, he always does shit to try and, like, you know, beta the person who's interviewing him or something. Like, if you watch his Dr. Phil appearance,
yeah,
like, you know, he was doing all this stuff to try and, like, you know, basically control the interview, and Dr. Phil wasn't having any of it. And I'll never forget, there was this one time when I first moved out here to LA, I hooked up with this guy named Vince Kelvin, who was like Ross's right-hand man, and he does a lot of stuff out here for, like, a local lair that he started or whatever.
Is Vince still associated with Ross?
No. They parted ways a while back. Ross always, like, ends up alienating the people who, like, you know, associate with him eventually. I've had numerous conversations with people that used to be, like, really good friends with Ross, like Swing Cat, Major Mark Cunningham, Steve Pickus.
David D'Angelo, all
these guys. David D'Angelo never really says anything about Ross, but I've gotten some inside scoop from a lot of other people on things that, you know, I'd probably be sued if I actually brought them to light and you know, voiced them out loud. But, I mean, Ross is just, he's one of those guys who you can tell when he's lying when his lips are moving. Everything the guy talks about is just complete BS, and you know, I wouldn't really care about it too much if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, a lot of guys actually take what he says to heart, and he leads a lot of guys down the wrong path, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I've had numerous contacts with people over the years who, you know, paid Ross a lot of money to have, like, professional hypno work done on them and by him and stuff like that, and they felt like they were worse off after, you know, they got involved with Ross than beforehand. And you know, just from a business perspective, like, he's screwed over pretty much every person that he's ever worked with, you know. So I just look at the patterns of behavior, because one of the best things I ever learned from a friend of mine who was a natural with women is he always said that people can lie to you with their words, but they can never lie to you with their actions. So, like, if you're on a date with a girl and you know, you say, are you having a good time? And she's like, oh, yeah, but, like, her arms are crossed and she's kind of leaning away from you. Like, that's a good way to kind of gauge, like, okay, like, she's really not having a good time, you know, that type of thing. So I always try and look at someone's actions and like, their history, and that always gives you a really good idea of, like, what they're about. And because people usually don't change their action, their behavior patterns. So their actions will be consistent, whereas their words will be all over the place. And there was a time not too long ago where Ross was, like, coming out and saying, like, oh, I'm turning over a new leaf, I want to work with everybody. And that lasted for all of, like, maybe, like, a month or two.
Yeah.
But, like, you can always tell. And it's the same thing with mystery. Like, I love mystery to death, but I always tell everyone I know, don't get involved with him in business, because he, you know, when I was going to the Project Hollywood kind of era,
mm-hmm.
where we were all hanging out at the Project Hollywood mansion and doing that type of thing that ended up in the game, I was actually really involved with that. I didn't make it into the book as much because I didn't live there. But there was a time where Mystery, this was right after he ended his relationship with Herbal, which some people might know about. He had this guy named Herbal who was like his business manager while he was living in Project Hollywood. And they had this big falling out over Katya and kind of started this whole chain of events that eventually got him kicked out of the house. But there was a time right after he broke up with Herbal where he was kind of courting me to be his, like, business manager type guy, where he wanted me to kind of come in and, like, run his company for him. And so I, like, met with him and sat down in, like, the courtyard out by the pool of Project Hollywood with him and had, like, a big long talk about what he wanted to do and stuff like that. And I quickly realized during that meeting that we were not a good fit. And it was probably one of the better decisions of my life not to, like, you know, team up with Mystery in a professional capacity. I love the guy to death, and I'd hang out with him in a heartbeat. But working with the guy, he just has a history of, like, not doing well with business partners, as you can see with, like, his lawsuit with Nick Savoy and, you know, falling out with Herbal and his falling out with Nick Coe and even going back to his Magic career where he was, like, screwing over his managers and stuff. So I always look at people's actions, and that tells me a lot about them.
So, yeah, I just did an interview about 2 weeks ago. I'm not going to name his name, but when it comes out, you know, people will hear it, but a guy who recently worked with Mystery who just went on his own, and, you know, he didn't want to say anything on in the interview, but, you know, it was the same thing, you know, and I remember thinking to myself, like, you know, it's a pattern, you know, you got to, at this point, you got to accept patterns like anything in life, you know, you got to look and see if a girl cheats on you, or she cheated on her last boyfriend, she's going to cheat on her next boyfriend, you know.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when it comes to Mystery, because the guy really is a genius. Like, he really does come up with really good stuff. But I find that when you try and rely on him for anything, you know, it always backfires on you. You know, like, you just got to take Eric for what he is, which is like a force of nature. You just got to kind of stand by and pick up what you can from him. But you can't, like, rely on him to, like, make your life better. You know?
Yeah.
Because he's got enough to deal with his own life.
Yeah.
So whenever I hung out with Eric, I never hung out with him with an agenda. You know, I never tried to, like, you know, get free training or, you know, like, you know, be his buddy just to, like, you know, further my own purposes. It was always just because I genuinely liked hanging out with the guy. And I would just sit back and watch him operate, and I would learn from watching instead of, like, trying to, like, you know, get him to teach me something or train me in some way. I think that's a big problem with a lot of guys in the community, which is they're looking for someone to kind of come in, take them under their wing, and, like, really, like, kind of do the work for them, as opposed to, like, being, like, someone of independent thought and mind and really taking the lessons that they learn from others and utilizing them. They want the work done for them instead of doing the work themselves, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you got in with Ross's material, and, you know, you obviously Speed Seduction wasn't for you, but was there anything at that point in your life, any breakthrough ideas or mind shifts that occurred, you know, that kept you on the path, you know, that kept you moving forward of saying, hey, you know what, Speed Seduction might not be for me, but I'm seeing this, and now I want to learn more?
Not really. It was mostly just like a uncontrollable urge to get laid that took me forward. You know, I think one of the things that really kind of was inspirational to me, and it might not sound inspirational to some people, but I can remember there was one night where I'm really good friends with this guy, Swing Cat.
Okay.
You know, he wrote this book called Real World Seduction or whatever, and he was one of Ross's top students for a while before he broke out on his own. And I became really, like, he was one of the first people I met in L.A., and I became really good friends with the guy. Still am to this day. And one night we were out in Hollywood, and we were at some weird party. It was at this club called Jade Empire or something like that, and it was had all these models and, you know, like, rock stars and stuff there, and we had somehow finagled our way into this thing. And on the drive home after the club had closed, I was kind of, like, talking about all these girls I talked to, and I was like, oh man, you know, like, you know, I'm just so fat and ugly, and, like, you know, my place, you know, my apartment sucks, and blah, blah, blah. And he just kind of looked over at me and, like, just said, dude, get over it. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that's kind of been, like, my mantra over time, because I realized that everything that keeps guys from becoming successful with women, it usually has to do with just their mindset. So if you can, like, say, like, okay, I'm fat, I'm bald, I'm ugly, I'm poor, I got a shitty place, I got a shitty car, I got no car, you know, like, you know, I got no money in the bank, whatever it is you think is keeping you from having success, just say, get over it, and, like, move forward like it's not an obstacle. And that was really, like, something that kind of switched my thinking around. And once I got past, like, you know, not feeling like an attractive guy or not feeling like a successful guy or whatever, I found that I was much more successful than when I was letting all that stuff kind of hold me back. So that, I guess that's kind of like, to answer your question, that's kind of like the thing that inspired me, was that all the bullshit that was keeping me from really succeeding,
mm-hmm.
it was just all in my head. And I just had to figure out a way to get past that. And that's really what, once I was able to do that, that's really when the floodgates opened. Because I had been successful, like, to some degree up until that point, but, you know, to be, like, on the level of someone like Mystery, or just to be happy with your results, you know, where, like, you can go out to a club and have fun, and, okay, maybe you don't get laid that night, but you, like, meet a girl, and, like, 3 dates later, like, she's in your bed, like, that type of thing. That, you know, I'm happy with, like, that level of success. And so, like, my interactions really changed from being kind of, like, desperate and, like, feeling like, oh, my God, I have to succeed with this, to, you know, being, you know, just, like, comfortable and happy with whatever it is I got, and eventually that led to success. I don't know if I'm explaining myself, you know, the best possible way, but that's kind of, like, how it worked out for me.
No, I understand. I understand. Now, you mentioned, like, the whole looks thing, and that's something that, you know, it's talked about a lot in the community, and you know, you've even been vocal about it, but a lot of guys just have trouble accepting this. And you know, then there's a lot of guys that say, hey, it's not the truth, you know. But how important are looks, you know, actually? Like, you know, not from the, you know, the point where guys say, oh, you know, looks aren't important at all, or are they important? You know, where do you stand on that as far as telling a guy who might be like, well, you know what, it's different for me, you know, I'm this or I'm that, you know?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, everyone has a different take on this type of thing. Mm-hmm. And there was a time back in, I believe it was 2004, there was a bunch of us up in Chicago for a Double Your Dating seminar where it was kind of like the first time, like, a lot of guys from Mystery's Lounge, the message boards, got together and met each other, like, face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time I met Zan. Do you know who Zan is?
Yeah, Zan, yep.
Yeah. So for people out there who don't know Zan, Zan's like a freaking male model. Like, he's just an incredibly good-looking guy, and he's also incredibly successful with chicks. Like, he's like a modern day Don Juan. He's just like amazing with girls. And I had like a conversation with him at like 3 a.m. at this McDonald's after we'd all been out at the clubs. And I just looked at him. I'm like, look at you, you know, what the fuck can I learn from you? Like, you know, you're an amazing looking guy. And here I am, like, I'm ugly. Like, how could I ever hope to, like, you know, get girls on the level that you do? And I forget exactly what it is, you know, he said. In fact, I think there's, like, some video out there of, like, you know, us actually having this conversation, because a friend of ours was there, like, videotaping it as we were talking. And
Where was it, Chicago?
Yeah, it was Chicago.
Okay, yeah, I've seen that. It's on YouTube, yep.
Yeah. So I'm sure people could track it down if they wanted to. But so Zan goes into this long-winded, drunk rant about, you know, things. But the thing that I really got from that talk was his basic philosophy, which is, you know, you move towards beauty and that away from which that is not beautiful. So basically you move towards positivity, you move away from negativity. And a lot of guys out there, they get comfortable with negativity when it comes to themselves. Like, they think, oh, because, you know, I have a big nose, or because I have a big ear, or like whatever, you know, girls aren't going to find that attractive. And it's easy for us to think that because we project what we believe and what we think onto other people. So if we're not attracted to a girl who's ugly, we believe that other people won't be attracted to her. If we're only attracted to girls with big boobs, we believe that other guys are only attracted to girls with big boobs. So you see, like, we see everything through such a subjective point of view that we believe that other people see things the exact same way. That's why whenever people have a difference of opinion on religion or politics or whatever, like, they just can't understand how other people can see things so differently because they're so close to their own point of view.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to with looks. What you have to understand is that women are wired differently than men. Like, women really rely on their emotions to help them, like, make decisions. And they're just hardwired that way naturally because they're child rearers. They have to be able to understand what a baby needs without that baby being able to communicate with them. So they're just naturally empathetic people. They pick up on people's emotions quicker and stronger than they do people's, you know, logic. And men are logical creatures by nature and less empathetic than women. So, you know, it's two very different points of view. Like, logically, we're like, yes, we want an attractive girl. And we can't understand why being with an unattractive woman would possibly, you know, benefit us in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
But for women, it's different. For women, it's more about what they feel. Now, I'm not going to say looks don't play a matter or a factor at all, because they do. I mean, some women just aren't attracted to certain things about how a guy looks. However, the good news is that most of the time that type of thing can be overruled by the emotion that they experience when they're with you. I mean, dude, you've probably been there. You've probably been drunk one night and made out or banged a girl that you never would have, you know, done so, like, you know, and never would have bragged to your friends about, you know what I mean? We've all been with girls who, like, weren't attractive, but we still had sex with them, you know?
Yeah.
And the same's true with, like, women. Like, there are a lot of hot women out there who've had sex with, like, lots of ugly guys. So, maybe they weren't attracted to them, you know, in the looks department, but there was something about them that made them willing to sleep with them. One of my best friends from high school was this guy. You know, he was, like, fatter than I was. He was a lot uglier than I was. But he was so funny that by the time he got to college, he got out of, like, this little cliquey high school arena and got into college. He was banging, like, supermodel quality women because he was just one of these guys who, like, could make girls laugh left and right and make them feel good, even though, like, he was still, like, the same fat, bald, ugly guy that he'd always been. So one of my big things was, once I was able to get past feeling sorry for myself and kind of being down on my looks, I was able to actually focus on the attraction phase. And to me, attraction is a little bit different than what other guys kind of see as attraction. A lot of guys try and make it a like a scientific formula, like, you know, A plus B equals C type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it more like something where if you can have fun with a girl and you can be confident around a girl, she'll usually be able to sleep with you. And the only thing that can ruin any of that is you kind of, like, getting negative about yourself or about a certain type of situation. And another thing you have to realize is that a lot of women, you never know what a woman's going to be attracted to. Like, my current girlfriend right now, she's absolutely gorgeous. Like seriously, a lot of people, like, see her and they're just like, you're with her? Seriously? Like, how'd you do that? And I think it was, like, on our third date. She kind of looks like Kim Kardashian, just kind of give you a visual.
Okay.
So, like, we're on our third date or so, and she's kind of telling me about, like, old boyfriends of hers. And she was like, yeah, you know, my first boyfriend, he was really good looking. And I was like, yeah, I can understand that. You know, she's a really attractive girl, so just makes sense that she'd be with an attractive guy. Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, you don't understand. He was like a male model. Like, he was, like, really good looking. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then she says, oh, he also graduated from college when he was 15, so he was, like, a super genius. And I was like, oh, okay, male model, good-looking, super genius guy. And she's like, oh, and he was also, like, a millionaire because his family was really wealthy. So it was like, male model, super genius, really good-looking guy. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, I want to date this guy. You know, like, why aren't you still with him, and why are you here with me? And she's like, you know, he was creepy. You know, I like hanging out with you better. And that's just one of the things, is like she gets approached on a daily basis by, like, so many different guys, it's ridiculous. Like, I'll even be there and guys will come up and be hitting on her.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that she really hammered on, like, when we first started dating, was the fact that, like, she really enjoyed being with me more than most other guys. And so the attitude aspect of attraction is so much more important than the looks, because maybe you don't have the looks, but, you know, you got the right attitude, and that's the thing that hits all the emotional triggers. And another thing is that you can't ever assume that you know what a girl is going to find attractive. Like, my girlfriend right now, she likes bigger guys, you know, oddly enough. And another funny thing was, like, you know, I think it was, like, on our first date, she kind of joked about how she had a fetish for guys with body hair. And, like, I'm part Italian, part Lithuanian, so, like, you know, if I don't have any clothes on, it looks like I'm wearing a jumpsuit, pretty much. So the first time that we had sex together, like, you know, we're in bed and I'm about to take off my shirt, and I'm like, I hope you weren't joking about that body hair thing. But like, she loves it, you know, and it's just one of those things where like you'd never think to look at a girl like her that she'd like big fat bald guys with like body hair, but she does. And there are lots of girls out there who just have weird taste in like what they find physically attractive about guys, you know. There was one girl I was really good friends with in college, and she had the biggest crush on Jack Black. And Jack Black by no means is a male model. He's not a beauty contest winner. But she'd choose to sleep with Jack Black over someone like Brad Pitt. And this is like a super hot, skinny, blonde chick. You know, she looks like she's like a Swedish like swimsuit model or something like that. So there are lots of girls out there who go for like guys who aren't traditionally good looking. And even more girls out there who go for guys that make them feel better than what most guys can make them experience. So if you focus on just having a good time with a girl and making her feel better than most guys can make her feel, because a lot of good-looking guys are boring. You know, they get by, they skate by on their looks, so they're just kind of like, you know, these guys who, like, don't have any interesting conversations or anything like that, aren't funny, don't crack jokes, don't really, like, they can't hang, you know? So, like, girls, yeah, they might be attracted to their looks at first, but then, like, that gets boring after the first 20 minutes or so. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my long-winded thing about looks. Looks don't matter as much as people think they do, but, you know, you should still, like, try and not look like a, you know, like a homeless bum.
Yeah. Yeah, I had my my moment of awakening came a few years back. I was waiting tables, and I worked with this kid, and we called him, he was so ugly that we actually, behind his back, we called him Handsome Nick. You know, that was our nickname, because it was just... And this, you know, he was in like a dingy band, like not even like good enough to play, you know, he didn't even get gigs, you know, but he would practice and shit. And he thought he was a rock star. Like he would talk like he was a rock star, and he got laid like a fucking rock star. It was just like, I remember I lost out a girl I wanted, wound up going home with him. And I was like, what the fuck, you know? And then I realized at that point, I was like, well, you know what? He's fun. Like he's not even that funny. Like, he doesn't make you laugh, but he's just fun to be around. Anytime you're around the guy, he thinks he's in a rock star. You know, he acts like Tommy Lee. You know, he walks around like he's the man. And if you're fun and comfortable in your own shoes, you know, I think that it goes a lot further, like you said, than just being,
yeah, I mean,
you know, God-given good looks.
Just to give you another example, like, I had a friend of mine. He was a natural with chicks, but he had, like, a deformed hand, like a deformed left hand. Like, it was like more like a three-fingered claw, like really like kind of small and deformed.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy got laid more than most of the guys who were like charging $3,000 for a workshop.
Really?
You know, like he'd just go out and, you know, he was short and he was kind of pudgy and didn't have any hair, and he had this like really disgusting hand. But he was able to go up to like really hot girls and like get them to like, you know, not only sleep with him, but a lot of them like would fall in love with the guy. And he just had, like, a really, like, aggressive, kind of, like, dominating personality that just kind of, like, would overwhelm you. And, you know, I learned a lot from the guy about, like, how important your personality is when it comes to attracting women. So, yeah, I would never discount anyone based on their looks. You know, some of the best-looking seducers in history have been, like, really ugly guys. You know?
Yeah. It's a tough thing for a guy to understand until you really experience it firsthand and you see, like, wait a minute, you know, it's not that way. Because a lot of guys still, they on the surface, I think, they buy the courses, and in the back of their mind, they want to believe it, but it's like a, you know, a mental block that they can't get over. And like you said earlier, it was, you know, the point you actually saw success is when you kind of just dropped all your mental blocks and said, the only thing that's keeping me from it is myself.
Yeah,
other than,
and
other than, like, okay, go ahead.
Oh, sorry about that. I was just going to say that, you know, even I, to this day, still fall into that frame where it's like, I can't believe this girl's into me. You know, it's like, look at her and look at me. Like, I'm so ugly compared to this chick. Like, but... You know, the proof's in the pudding. Like, you know, the proof's staring me in the face, and I still, like, in my head, I'm like, something's wrong here. So I totally understand that point of view. But, you know, it's one of those things where, like, you just got to get over it. You got to, like, push past it and believe that it's possible.
Other than the issues that some guys have with looks, what do you think is like another thing that guys just don't get, you know, like about picking up women that most guys just don't get?
The biggest thing that I've noticed with like my students and other people's students,
mm-hmm.
is the notion that you're doing something to the girl. How best to explain this?
I understand what you're saying, but explain it for the people that, you know, I totally know what you mean, but...
Yeah, so, like, you know, much to many a man's chagrin, women are people who have, like, their own thoughts, feelings, emotions, and, like, decisions, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys look at pickup as something like, okay, I do X, Y, and Z, and that will get me, like, this type of result. And a lot of guys meet with frustration when they go out and try to apply a lot of these tactics that they learn from the community, because like they'll go up to a girl and they'll like recite every pattern, every routine, every line correctly, and maybe it gets a response from a girl, maybe it doesn't, but for the most part they feel like, you know, the girl's not doing what they should be doing because, you know, they spat this game at them.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I discovered is that, like, when you kind of back off from the mentality of trying to make a girl feel attracted to you and trying to, like, make a girl want to make out with you or have sex with you or whatever, like, when you get past that notion that you can actually make a girl do anything, it actually frees you up a lot, because a lot of the guys who, like, get frustrated and get rejected are the guys who try and, like, force a girl to, like, feel a certain way or act a certain way or think a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
So when you just sit back and you create opportunities for people to experience and think and feel the way you want them to, and you allow them to enter into those opportunities of their own free will, you get so much more success. Like, it's a difference between walking into a club and going up to a girl and, like, spending all your time with that girl trying to get her to come home with you that night,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to walking into a club, meeting a lot of different people, having a good time, dancing, drinking, all that stuff, and then finding a girl who's, like, so into your energy that she just wants to bang you in the bathroom right there.
Yeah.
You know, it really is, like that's, like, the contrast. And it goes back to what I was talking about before with Zan.
Mm-hmm.
When I first met Zan, this was a guy who had, like, 6 different girlfriends. All of them were hot. All of them knew about each other, and all of them had sex together, you know? And I honestly believed it was just because of the guy's looks. But if you ever meet Zan, you know that he's just got this attitude about him. And his philosophy, that whole thing about moving towards beauty and away from that which is not beautiful. In fact, I talk about that in my book, The Art of Approaching, as the Zan philosophy. It really is this thing about, like, creating this energy around you that's, like, so much fun and so positive and so addicting that people just naturally gravitate towards it and become what you want them to be because, like, they're voluntarily doing it. The guys that I've noticed who are, like, the best at attracting women are really the guys who are, like, the best at just, like, having fun and having a good time and creating opportunities. Like, instead of, like, calling up a girl and asking her out on a date and trying to get her to, like, you know, show up and call them back and stuff, they'll call up, they'll leave a message, they're like, hey, I'm going to this party, you know, it's going to be really fun, you know, you should come. Like, they just give opportunities. And if the girl doesn't respond, you know, so what? They move on to the next one. But if the girl does respond, does take them up on it, they usually just create more and more opportunities until it's to the point where, like, hey, here's an opportunity to sleep with me, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing that a lot of guys don't understand, is that you're not doing something to a girl. You're creating an opportunity for her to either take or pass up. This whole thing, I know Mystery had a thing a while back about the standards for mastery in pickup. It was called, like, the 5 out of 5, where if you could approach 5 girls in a row and get each one of those girls to be your girlfriend, like, you were considered a master pickup artist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone else has heard about that, but he was very fond of sharing his mentality with me. To me, that's kind of like an unrealistic thing to expect most guys to achieve. And
yeah.
Even then, like, I don't even think Mystery's been able to do that, even though he says he has. But to me, like, I guess a girlfriend is a different definition than to him.
Yeah.
But I, you know, I don't want to have to approach five girls and have like five girlfriends. I just want one girlfriend, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or I want to approach, you know, five girls and have one of them like want to sleep with me or something like that. Like, I don't want to like have to put forth that much effort. So to be the type of guy that the people come to you that are already kind of vibing like what you're putting out there and like want to do what you're putting out, it's so much easier and so much more effective than being the type of guy who like goes up to like the hottest girl in the club and tries to force himself on her and like beat her down into submission. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, like what you're saying, it rings true, because, you know, like a lot of guys have that attitude of like, you know, if they do happen to get a hot chick, they'll be like, oh, I can't believe I got her to sleep with me, or I got her. And, you know, the fact of the matter is women like sex as much, if not more, than men. I mean, every girl I've ever dated has wanted to fuck more than I have, you know. And when you have a lot of female friends, you realize how much these girls want to have sex. And like you said, you know, like, just present the opportunity to them. Like, sometimes that's all you have to do. A lot of these women, you know, you're blowing it by trying too hard. If you're just that fun guy, you know, you're just going to get it on the basis that the girls just want to have sex as well as you do.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys don't understand the fact that, like, if a woman's even, like, halfway attractive, like, she gets hit on, like, a lot. Like, mm-hmm. a whole lot. And if she's, like, really good looking, she gets hit on, like, constantly, every day, to the point where she's sick of it. So if you can be a guy who's, like, chill and relaxed and, like, fun and interesting, like, she's going to gravitate towards you as opposed to, like, you know, someone who's, like, actively, like, running game on them, like they get, you know, hit on, like, every other day of the week. I just had lunch yesterday with a really good friend of mine who's an absolute gorgeous girl. In fact, she was on that TV show Rock of Love, the first season.
Okay.
She was, like, one of the girls that, you know, Bret Michaels, like, had the pick of. Don't judge her because of that, though. She's actually quite a nice girl. But she's, like, drop-dead gorgeous. Like, she's a go-go dancer, and, you know, she does all this modeling and acting and stuff. And she's an absolutely wonderful girl. And, you know, she's the type of girl where she gets hit on, like, all the time, to the point where, like, you know, she's just constantly fending off guys. But, you know, she's happy to meet someone who can just, like, chill and relax and, like, have a good time and, like, have fun. You know what I mean? My current girlfriend is the exact same way, you know. She has guys leaving notes on her car because they were too afraid to, like, approach her, like, as she was, like, you know, walking to wherever it was she was going.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. I mean, like, that's how often, like, you know, she gets hit on. And when she met me, like, I was just, like, so different from most of the other guys that she dated in the past that, you know, she could just appreciate the fact that I could be, like, relaxed around her and I wasn't constantly, like, trying to get her into bed and stuff like that. So it works out, you know. Like, I like to tell guys, like, you know, have a little bit of patience. Like, don't, if you go out trying to get laid, like, the very same night that you're going out, you have, like, an 80 to 90% chance of being, like, disappointed. And if you do get a girl to sleep with you, chances are she's not going to be that high quality. Like, you might get, like, a hot drunk chick every once in a while, but for the most part, they're going to be average to below average in the looks department. At least that's been my experience with one-night stands. I don't know about yours. You know, if you just give it some time, like, give it at least, like, 3 dates or so, like, you know, not pressure the woman, just, like, give time for the comfort to build and the rapport to build and the attraction to build and stuff like that, you can usually get most girls to sleep with you. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah. And let's talk just a bit about approaching. I know, you know, you wrote the book on it, The Art of Approaching, and what, you know, just tell me some of the little things that make a big difference when it comes to approaching, you know, an above average looking woman.
Probably the biggest thing that I've learned is paying attention to the girl. A lot of guys, when they see a girl they want to approach, they get so focused on their own kind of, like, you know, urges, attraction, whatever. They're so in their own head that they really don't think about how they're coming off to the girl. Like, you know, I've had so many experiences where maybe I've approached a girl and I wasn't paying enough attention and just noticed that maybe she was, like, in a bad mood or, you know, she was on her period or something. She just wasn't feeling up to, like, you know, dealing with other people, especially a guy who's, like, trying to, like, talk to her out of the blue. And those are the times where you tend to get rejected, and you tend to get rejected pretty harshly. So being able to, like, actually pay attention to the girl that you're approaching is a big boon. Like, before I approach a girl, I'll take, like, a second or two to just kind of, like look at her and, like, try and get a read of, like, where she's at, like, mentally and emotionally. Because it's a different game approaching a girl in a bar or a club than it is approaching a girl at, like, an ice cream stand or a grocery store or a gas station or something along those lines, you know? Like, you can approach women anywhere, but you can't approach them the same way. Because, you know, a girl in a bar or a club, they're going to be a little bit more guarded, and you have to be a lot more high energy to attract them. But if you try and take that same, like, energy to a coffee shop and approach a girl there, you're going to come off like a freak, you know. You got to, like, tone down your approach, and you got to, like, use lines that maybe, like, a little bit different, not too badly. But one of the things I like to do, that I like to teach guys, and this is something a guy can go out tomorrow and start doing, is I call it the eye contact test.
Okay.
This is something I actually learned from my natural friend who had, like, the messed up hand.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it is it's just a way to establish nonverbal communication before you start talking to a girl and get the sense of whether or not she's open to you approaching her. And ever since I started using this technique, like, I get rejected maybe, like, one out of every 1,000 approaches, you know. So it's really effective. And basically what you do is, like, you know, like, let's say you're walking down the grocery aisle and you see a girl walking towards you. You just stare at her eyes, and you keep looking at her eyes until she looks up and the two of you make eye contact, okay? Once eye contact is made, all you have to do is smile and nod, or just smile.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if she smiles back, okay, that's a nonverbal conversation right there. She just responded to your opener, which was the smile. So if the girl smiles back, she's open to being approached. She's open to being talked to further. And that's when you go in with your opening line. If the girl kind of, like, looks away quickly, or, like, you know, doesn't smile or anything like that, then chances are she's not open to being approached. So, you know, you hold back, you don't approach her, you look for another target. And that saves you the time and effort of, like, trying to open a girl who's, like, resistant to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm always about the path of least resistance. Like, I don't like being rejected. I don't think anyone does. So I only go for girls who are open to me initially meeting them. And ever since I started doing that, like, the quality of women I've been able to meet has been so much higher. Because even though, like, maybe there's a chance that I might hit it off with a girl who doesn't want to speak to me, like, maybe she's having a bad day or whatever, I don't want to go forward with the effort to, like, overcome that, because there's so many other easier targets out there. So that's the big thing, is just paying attention to a girl and her nonverbal signals. Always pay attention to her eyes. Like, a lot of guys don't know that, like, a girl's eyes will always betray what it is she's feeling. Like, if you're in good rapport with a chick and you notice that her pupils are really dilated,
mm-hmm.
and she's smiling and she's holding really good eye contact, that's an attraction sign. That's an IOI, you know. So that's something that if you know how to look for it and how to spot it, that can tell you that you're on the right track. That can give you a sense of, like, okay, now it's time to amp up my game. So many guys are so focused on, oh, what am I going to say next, or, oh, I hope I don't mess this up. They're so in their own head, they stop paying attention to the girl, and that's when they start messing stuff up, because they're not, you know, they're not getting the cues from her that they need to progress. So that's probably the biggest thing I notice in a guy's having difficulty with approaching, is that they're just so in their own head, that they don't take the time to kind of, like, you know, pay attention to the woman that they're actually trying to attract, to be with.
Yeah, you actually brought something interesting up, and something that, you know, I very rarely hear dating coaches or gurus talk about, and that's just the idea of getting good, like you said, with, you know, the eye contact thing that you use in store, grocery stores, or even bars. But if you can just get good at spotting what kind of girls are open to talk to a guy, you know, and you're really able to read women like that, you know, it would cut back a ton on the rejection. And like you said, a lot of guys just are dumb, and they don't know, they can't read if a girl's just out to have a girl's night out and have a close conversation with her female friends, Or if a girl's out and she's looking to party and have fun, and you know, if you can just like get out of your head and actually pay attention to that, I think that alone could, like you're saying, drastically increase or decrease the amount of rejections you're getting, increase the amount of success. And I think that is excellent advice, and that guy should really pay attention to that, because it's not talked about very often.
Yeah, and you know, it even goes further than that, because once you're talking to a girl, like, you know, if you're paying attention to what she responds to and what she's not responding to, that can actually like really help you out. A lot of guys get kind of stuck in the boring question phase, as I like to call it, where it's like, what's your name? What do you do? Where do you live? You know, what's your favorite color? You know, that type of thing. And, you know, a girl might, you know, respond to that initially, but, you know, she's going to get bored with it quick. And if you like, you don't notice that she's getting bored, you're just going to keep going down that path. So if you notice, like, if a girl really lights up, if you mention, I don't know, something like the Black Eyed Peas or, like, type of band or whatever, if she really lights up and you can tell that she's passionate about it, you know, go forward with that thread of conversation as opposed to, like, changing up and talking about a band you like, you know, or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
You got to pay attention to the girl, because I think one of the best pieces of advice I ever got from my buddy Swing Cat, aside from the get over it thing, was he said something about how all girls are different, but they're not that different.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the stuff that we use and that we teach guys is templated, and it's meant to work with every girl. But you got to realize that every girl is an individual. Every girl has different tastes and likes and dislikes and stuff like that. So even though you can use stuff to kind of get in the door, when it comes down to actually succeeding with individual women, you got to tailor your approach to what that girl responds to best. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is if you actually pay attention to what she is and is not responding to. Like with my girlfriend currently, she has a really sarcastic sense of humor. So if I hadn't been able to kind of adjust my game and be sarcastic back to her and like kind of mirror her sense of humor, she probably wouldn't have, come around to finding me attractive as quickly as she did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 'cause most guys that she dates with are like, you know, they can't keep up with her sense of humor.
Yeah.
But because I was able to notice that and adjust my game accordingly, I was able to succeed with her. And that's really one of the tricks that a lot of the top guys, you know, they might talk about or something like that, but that's really their secret is, you know, Mystery and Neil Strauss and these guys, they're actually really kind of inherently astute at, you know, reading women, like where they're at mentally and emotionally and stuff like that, so that they can, like, calibrate their game towards their audience, basically. You know, Neil's a writer, Mystery is a performer, you know, originally and stuff like that. So they just have this kind of inherent sense of, like, how to read their audience. And the average guy out there trying to do the type of stuff that they teach don't pick up on that. They don't pick up on the fact that, like, okay, you know, in some ways you're performing and you have to, like, kind of see what your audience is responding to, you know. So that's a big thing. I think that's a big thing that, you know, separates the guys who find success with this type of stuff and the guys who get frustrated with it, is just the ability to calibrate their approach to a specific type of girl that they're, you know, talking to.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about that. I was just having this conversation with a friend of mine. I was talking about how, you know, I have like you said about your girlfriend, I have a naturally sarcastic sense of humor. And then a few years back, I read Double Your Dating, and I went gung-ho, cocky, funny, sarcastic. And there was, you know, you run into the girls that eat it up, but then you get to the girls that just don't get it, don't like it, and don't want anything to do with it. And you think you're doing something wrong, but it's like you're saying, it's just the girl. Like, you can't expect every girl to enjoy sarcastic humor. Some girls don't get it, or they just don't find it funny. And you got to be able to read that. And I couldn't read it, and I just kept trying to shove it down every girl's throat, not paying attention of whether or not it was working. I think that's definitely a great point you're making, because a lot of guys probably make similar mistakes, whether they're following, you know, whatever guru's method they're following. They don't realize that, you know, girls, you have to adjust, and that the good gurus and guys that are really good do know how to adjust naturally.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've had a lot of situations where I've been exchanging emails with students, and they're always like, I used this cocky, funny line, but it didn't go over too well. The girl got insulted,
Yeah.
And oh, I think a lot of guys don't really understand cocky, funny the way that Dave D'Angelo means it. I think a lot of guys either they end up insulting the girl, or they end up, you know, just not calibrating the situation and being like, you know, coming off as like a jerk or whatever. A lot of girls out there have like very underdeveloped sense of humor, as I like to call them. Like
yeah, I mean,
like,
that's exactly what I experienced with my.
Yeah, they have they like, you know, like the jokes that you told in third grade are still funny to them and things like that. And you know, in all fairness, there are a lot of guys out there like that too. You know, I took a girl I was dating to this comedy club one time, and before the show started, I was kind of like, you know, just naturally just doing some sarcastic, cocky, funny stuff. And she was like, stop being mean to me. You know, like I was like really like, you know, pissing her off, I guess. And I kind of pulled back at that point and was like, oh, I'm sorry. But, you know, you just got to remember that you can only tease a girl so much until like she either gets annoyed, upset, or offended. Some guys just take it to a level that it wasn't meant to be taken to. So you got to do it for as long as the girl enjoys it. But the minute she stops enjoying it, you got to pull it back a bit. It's a tool to use, you know. Everything's a tool.
Yeah, and I think a lot of guys, who may come from lack of experience with women and might even have a little bit of a, you know, a underneath hidden resentment towards women, and they look at, you know, cocky, funny, or push-pull, or whatever they're learning, and they look at it as a license to just be a dick and take out, you know, fuck this, you know, I get to be a dick to a hot chick and she's going to like me, and they go overboard with it without really understanding that it's not about being a dick, it's just about being playful and, you know, something
that... that's another interesting thing, is there are a lot of guys who get into this thing and they look at it as, like, revenge for all the girls who made fun of them in high school, or...
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, where, you know, they're going to suck the pain away, or, you know, kind of like show everyone like that they can get hot girls or something like that. I know that was certainly the case with me when I was in college. You know, I had a lot of resentment towards women because I felt like because they didn't find that I was attractive, that I was like, you know, like less of a human being, and that I was going to learn to be like this great seducer and like have sex with all these hot girls and like that'll show them because like I'm actually worth something. Or I think that's something that a lot of guys who struggle with girls kind of face at one point or another, is just the fact that like there's this, just this, like I don't want to call it misogyny, but like there's this streak of like male anger that like, you know, is lashing out against all the girls who like ever rejected them or made them feel like they weren't worthy of like happiness on some level. And I think that that's where you get a lot of like the I call it the PUA bullshit, where you got these like pickup artists like jockeying for like the best, you know, ranking in the world, or like I can pick up any girl, or, you know, more male adoration or whatever. I'm always kind of weary of the guys who like want to be like adored by, you know, men. I want the guys who like don't really care what other people think of them. They just like want to have a good time, or like they want to have fun or whatever.
Yeah.
I actually developed this thing called the video game test. And it's basically like, if I'm hanging out with like a pickup guru or something like that, if they can just like chill out and like play a video game with me or like something like that and like just have a good time, they're cool. But if they're like always like, you know, trying to like sell me on like how great they are, or like how many like chicks they can bang or whatever, if they can't just like sit down and relax and like enjoy like my company, then there's something wrong with them. Like, I'll never forget, there was a time where I was running around with Tyler Durden, and we went to go have lunch together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we sat down to have lunch, and, you know, he was like, dude, we can't have lunch. We got to go pick up chicks. We got to go pick up that waitress over there. Like, he couldn't just sit down for, like, an hour and share a meal with me. He had to, like, be on. He had to be doing something.
Yeah.
But someone like Brad P, for instance, like Brad P would come over, he'd chill out, he'd have a beer, like watch a video game or like whatever. And, you know, like game wouldn't even come up. We wouldn't even talk about chicks that, you know, we were like, you know, dating or whatever. And like, to me, Brad P is so much more of a better pickup artist than Tyler Durden could ever hope to be. And it shows in just his attitude, where like, you know, he'll freely admit that like he can't open every set, that he gets rejected and stuff like that. You try and talk to Tyler about that, he'd be like, no, dude, I can open any set. I can open any set, man. Yeah. So there's a lot of disconnect there with guys who feel the need to like kind of prove themselves to other people. When to me personally, the only person you have to prove yourself to is yourself. So if you're with a girl that you're not happy with, but you're with her because, you know, she's good looking and you think your friends are jealous, that's really not something that you want to continue to do. You want to be with a girl who makes you happy, because that's the name of the game, isn't it? Like, it's not just about sex, because after a while, sex gets boring, you know, it all starts to feel the same. But, you know, if you're with a girl who generally makes you happy, sex is so much better, and it stays that way for, like, a really long time. So it really comes down to, like, you know, what girl makes you feel better than any other girl out there? Are you happier now than you were before you started seeing this girl? You know, that's the type of stuff that guys got to be aware of.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I think that a lot of guys do get caught up in the whole community attitude of, you know, I can pick up any girl, and then they're not satisfied. And, you know, these are the same guys who couldn't even talk to a girl 6 months ago, and now they're getting dates and stuff, but they still have low self-confidence because they think they should be, you know, 5 for 5, because that's what Mystery says is makes a social master, when that's not even really what they wanted coming into it. You know, what they wanted was just a girlfriend, and yeah. Now they're so caught up with this mentality of you have to game every girl, and you got to follow these rules, and this, and this, and this, and,
Yeah, I do a yearly top 10. I kind of like rank different pickup artists and stuff like that. And there's always like a lot of controversy over my picks.
Yeah, it's hilarious that the guys get so.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny. Like a lot of people really take the ranking seriously, and one of the biggest criticisms I get is like, you know, it's like, oh well, there's this other pickup artist who got laid way more than this guy, and I'm like, well, I don't base the, you know, the rankings on, you know, strictly like, you know, numbers of girls they've had sex with. You know, you could go out and have sex with like 1,000 hookers and you'd get laid more than most of these pickup gurus would, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you deserve to be on the list, you know.
Yeah.
So there's like a lot of different factors I look at from guys when I'm like ranking them or like trying to decide whether or not I want to learn from them or something like that. And the number of women that they've slept with throughout the year is actually very low on my list of like stuff that to look at. You know, it's more about, you know, how are they as a person, how are they as a teacher, how innovative are they, you know, things like that. You know, like how many students have they like, you know, really helped out, that type of thing. And when you start looking at that sort of thing, like you can really start to see like who the standouts are, who the people are that you should learn from, you know. So
yeah, no, I agree that it is funny that to get the responses of some of the guys and not understanding that, you know. Like I know even, you know, we did a top 10, and I know you did a top 10, and we both had Adam Lyons, and a lot of guys are like, how can you include Adam Lyons when he has a girlfriend? He had one girl all year, and like, that doesn't mean he's not good, or it doesn't mean he's not doing, you know, what he's doing. You know, the fact that he has a girlfriend that he wanted and that he's happy with, you know, it shows that he's capable of getting what he wants, you know, and a lot of guys...
That's the end game, you know. A lot of guys who think pickup artist is just about, like, having a different chick every night, like, that's not what it's about. Like, if that's what makes you happy, then that's what it's about. But it really comes down to, like, finding, like, a girl who makes you happy. I mean, I've got a girlfriend right now. I don't think I should be penalized, you know, because like, I actually found a girl who makes me happy, and I'm happy with her. I don't think Adam should be penalized. I mean, Neil has a girlfriend all the time. You know, like he's always got like a different girlfriend or something like that. Doesn't mean that, you know, he's any less of a pickup artist. A lot of guys say like, oh, well, having a girlfriend, you know, it like decreases your skills. Like, you know, it's like they get rusty or whatever. And I don't think that's the case because, you know, you still got to be with like, you still got to attract that girl that you're with. I mean, you can't just like become like a fat, lazy slob and expect her to still want to be around you, you know? So,
yeah,
I don't know, like, I see, like, to me, like, if a pickup artist has a girlfriend, like, that's the guy I want to learn from, because he knows something, you know, he's had experience with, you know, with chicks on a deeper level than these guys who just get the bathroom lays.
Yeah.
You know?
Huh, what advice as far as, meeting girls. I know I've heard in the past you say that bars and clubs aren't your favorite place for meeting women. You know, what kind of places have you had success with, or have you, you know, people have success with outside of the bars and club arena?
Well, I don't think bars and clubs are bad necessarily. They're just hard. They're like a lot harder than most other places you could go to meet girls. And like I've said many times, I'm a lazy guy. I don't like to work too hard to get a chick. So, like, there are some guys who love bars and clubs, and they can go and they can do them just fine. Me personally, the way I do it is I'm always using the internet for dating. Like, I've always got like some type of profile up somewhere or something. Because to me, online dating, it doesn't get much easier than that. And the big problem with online dating is quality of women. Sometimes you don't get like very attractive girls off online. But you know, you do get girls, and sometimes just the ego boost of having girls emailing you is enough to like, you know, keep you going. So I always have some type of online date thing happening. I like the free dating sites because more girls join them. Stuff like plentyoffish.com, for instance. That's a fantastic site to meet girls on because it's free, and you get a lot of hot girls who just like sign up just like for a whim. MySpace, another great one. MySpace, they should call it hookup space because you just got a bunch of people on there looking to hook up. You can meet like some really hot girls on there too. I've had a lot of success with Craigslist. Craigslist is a gold mine for hot girls. I mean, you have something like a million people a day going through that site. Some of them have to be hot chicks. So, you know, I'm always using the internet just because it's easy, it's convenient, and it's effective. But really, like, you just got to look at any place as, you know, an opportunity to meet girls. You know, I've talked about grocery stores and coffee shops and things like that. And I used to criticize guys for saying, like, you know, bypass the clubs, go to the grocery stores, you know, because you can meet girls there. Because I used to think, like, oh, okay, you know, get together with your friends and, like, hey, we're going to go to Ralph's and we're going to, like, pick up, like, you know, we're going to pick up some milk and some hot chicks while we're at it. But I find, like, you know, as you go throughout your day running errands, like, you know, you have to go to the grocery store to pick up food eventually. So while you're there, if you see a hot chick, hey, why not approach her? Lines are great places to meet girls. Anytime you're standing in line and there's like a chick in front of you or a chick behind you, you might as well start up a conversation because they're not doing anything. They're just waiting there. Where else? I like coffee shops, like any place girls go to like hang out or shop, like malls, things like that, bookstores. There's a great mall close to me called The Grove. It's this big outdoor mall here in Hollywood. And on any given day, you can go there and find girls like eating, shopping, hanging out, doing whatever. And you can just go there and like, you know, just meet tons and tons of girls. It's ridiculous. A lot of big bookstores like Barnes and Noble have like coffee shops in them. So you get girls who go there shopping for books and they sit down and grab a coffee. Like if you meet a girl within like, you know, the hallowed halls of Barnes and Noble looking for books, you can approach her and then you can instant date her into the coffee shop. It's like, are you doing anything right now? You want to grab a coffee? You know, that type of thing. That works great. So pretty much any time you're just going throughout your day and you see an opportunity to talk to a girl, just approach her. You know, the worst that can happen is like, you know, nothing comes of it. The best that can happen is that you get a number, you meet up with her later on, and you end up, you know, having sex with her or something like that. A lot of guys think the only place to go to meet chicks are bars and clubs because that's where people go. But I found that bars and clubs are actually much more effective if you use them as like an intensifier. Where like, let's say you meet a girl at a grocery store, you get her number. Call her up later that night and you say, like, hey, you know, like, you want to meet for some drinks? I know this great bar. So, you know, you meet at the bar and you become like her group, you know, the person that she's having drinks with. Because, like, if you try to approach a girl in a bar, she's like anchored to a group in there, whether it be a group of girlfriends or like a group of like mixed friends or maybe like another guy that she's out on a date with or whatever. And, you know, you can do your best to try and like game her and pull her away. But because she's anchored to another group, that group will always be working to, you know, pull her back because maybe, you know, they're her ride or like, you know, like her cousin's in town and she doesn't want to like leave her or something like that. You never know what it is. But if you meet a girl at a bar or a club for a date, you know, that's different because you're her anchor. Like she's there for you. She's there, you know, hanging out with you. So if someone else comes in and tries to pull her away, the chances of her leaving you are a lot slimmer than they would be if, like, you know, you were competing with another guy for her affections and, you know, you met her in the bar. So I always look at bars and clubs now more as a place to take a girl to have a good time and intensify her feelings of connection with me, as opposed to going there to meet her. So I'll try and meet her outside of the bar, whether it be like, you know, just an average everyday thing, like on the street or, you know, in a place like a shopping mall or something like that, or the internet, and then, like, you know, go out on a date and then meet her or bring her to a bar or club that I know of, have a few drinks and use that to, like, you know, get to know her better. I found that to be a much more effective strategy than going to a bar or club for the specific purpose of meeting a chick. But like I said, I'm different from most guys. Like my buddy Swing Cat, he can go to a club any night of the week and meet a girl and be having sex with her in the bathroom within 15 minutes or whatever. You know, I can't do that. I don't want to do that. You know, like I'm more of a slow and steady type guy where I'll meet a girl and by the third date, you know, fifth date at the most, like I'm having sex with her. So, and I like to joke with Swing Cat that I think the quality of women I get's a little bit higher than his.
Yeah.
But, you know, to his credit, he does have, like, really hot chicks, you know, around him most of the time.
I mean, you've always been the guy I've went to and a guy a lot of other people have gone to for, you know, advice on approaching, and I guess probably because of all the experimenting you've done yourself and hanging around with a lot of the top PUAs, you've always had you know, a collection of the best openers. Do you have anything new, any good ones that you've heard recently, or any of you're in a relationship now, but any of your friends have used recently that you want to share, you know, with any of the listeners?
Yeah, my one opener that I developed that actually works pretty well. Mm-hmm. It's actually great to use in a bar or club. You know, if you're trying to find yourself there to pick a girl up at. And I call it my girly drink opener. And this actually stems from the fact that I don't like alcohol. So, like, when I go out to a bar, I always get, like, these really girly drinks, like, you know, the stuff that tastes good.
Yeah.
So the opener basically goes, like, you know, and it's an opinion opener because I actually think that those are, like, the most effective type of openers that you can get. So I'll walk up to a girl and I'll say, like, you know, hey, guys, you know, I don't mean to bug you, but real quick, me and my friend are having this argument. Would you think any less of a guy if you saw him drinking a girly drink as opposed to a manly drink? So something like a pina colada versus a Jack and Coke. Like, do girls really, like, look at what a guy drinks and think that, you know, oh, I don't want to, you know, hang out with him because he's drinking something with a pink umbrella in it, you know? So I'll, like, use that type of opener and, you know, girls will sit there and be like, oh, yeah, you know, like, I think that's fine. Or, like, oh, I'd never, like, be seen with, like, a guy who drinks girly drinks or whatever. And then you could be like, well, why not? You know, like, what do you got against girly drinks? And you can take the conversation from there. Any good opener is an opener that gives you the ability to segue into new and different conversational threads. And I found that one works pretty well because it's kind of topical. If you're in a bar or a club, like, it works.
Yeah, I haven't heard that one, but that definitely touches. It's fun, it's light, and it brings up the, you know, the man woman dynamic a little bit. So yeah,
that's a Joseph Matthews original right there.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your book. I know I had read your book a few years back, but I know you've added a ton of stuff to it. What kind of stuff can guys expect to find in The Art of Approaching?
Well, you know, when I first wrote The Art of Approaching back in 2004, it was really just kind of a collection of openers that I had used to, you know, that I had found worked really well in meeting chicks. Because to me, like, the hardest part of the whole process of dating and attraction and stuff like that is the initial meet. Like, if you can't meet the type of girl you want to date, it's going to be really hard for you to succeed with women. Mm-hmm. So it all stems from your ability to meet, like, girls that you really like. Once you're able to meet girls effectively, the other stuff can be quite easy, actually. So the hardest part is about, you know, overcoming approach anxiety, like getting in there and, you know, talking to a girl in a way where, you know, she's not going to reject you right away and, in fact, actually want to, like, continue to talk to you and see you again. So over the years, like, I try and update the book at least once a year because, you know, tactics change, things like, you know, things change. Attitudes change. Some things stay the same, but for the most part, I want to try and keep the information up to date. And so over the years, it's grown from just like a collection of openers to like I think it's like 350 pages of pickup knowledge now. So I go over stuff like, you know, the big thing with me is confidence building, like being
okay.
able to, you know, be a confident guy. And a lot of guys have like different definitions of what confidence means. To me, it's really about secure self-knowledge. It's about knowing who you are, what you're going to do, what you're not going to do, what you like, what you don't like, things like that. And, you know, once you're able to have confidence, you know, approaching becomes easier. I deal with overcoming approach anxiety. So a lot of guys, like, they're just afraid of, like, going up to a girl they don't know and talking to her and things like that. I give techniques on how to overcome that. I have specific openers guys can memorize and use effectively. I even teach guys how to create their own openers. There's a lot of stuff in there about flirting. To me, flirting is really about kind of that cocky, funny thing, but also about, you know, having fun with a girl. Talk about seducing chicks, getting them in the bed, all types of stuff. Like, it really does cover the gamut now. And I've gotten so many, you know, great reviews of the book over the years that I'm actually really proud of it. And it's helped a lot of guys, like thousands and thousands of guys over the years. Like, you know, I get emails all the time from guys saying, I met my girlfriend because of you. Like, I'm getting married because I learned this from you and stuff. And it, you know, really makes me feel good.
Yeah, I read the book back when it was probably about 100 pages, and I thought it was a bargain at the time. It was one of the books that I used to, you know, use as my little cheat sheet back when I did it. I loved it just for the section on the openers and stuff. I thought it was great to have such a big collection in one spot. I couldn't, you know. Now with the additional pages, I'm sure it's just packed with stuff. You want to just tell the listeners how they can learn more about you and you know, if they're interested in the book, how they can find it?
Yeah, they can go to my website, artofapproaching.com. They can sign up. I have a free daily newsletter where I send out like a new tip every day that they can sign up for free. You can actually, when you sign up for my newsletter, I give away a free book. It's called The Ultimate Guide on How to Meet, Date, and Seduce Women. It's got a lot of good free information in there. And if you want to go even further with it, you can get my course, The Art of Approaching, which you can find at artofapproaching.com. I'm also on Facebook. I have a group on Facebook. It's actually a fan page. It's the How to Meet Women fan page. So they can look me up on there, and I do like an update every day, like giving a new tip or like whatever. So they can add me on Facebook or Twitter. Meet Women on Twitter. So just look me up on there. And of course there's the blog, thundercatseductionlayer.com, but I haven't updated that in a while, but hopefully I'll start again soon. But you can find a lot of good information from the past on there, and a lot of my fights with Ross Jeffries as well. So.
Yeah, if you guys are into drama and you want to get your kick, you can definitely get it at the Seduction Lair. It's my guilty pleasure is reading the drama that, you know, through over the years. But all right, Joe. Thanks for coming on. It was great talking to you. It was fun to hear about your stories and whatnot, and some great advice for the listeners.
Oh, thanks for having me on, man. It was a blast.
Cool. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Definitely, anytime you want.
All right. Thanks again for joining us, and don't forget to head over to freepuaopeners.com to grab yourself a free copy of an ebook containing 177 of the best pickup artist openers available. That's freepuaopeners.com.